Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Russ Sersosimo. Russ is the managing partner of Hemgen Synergistics, founder of Medical Cannabis Society, Keystone Integrated Care Dispensaries, and also the founder of Mountaineer Integrated Care Dispensaries. A lot of great stuff going on. So thanks for joining us today, Russ.
You got it. Good to be here, Maynard.
Yeah, super excited. You know, today we're going to be talking about some cool stuff. You have some really cool stories, your background, obviously, and your background in cannabis, obviously. But, you know, talking about hemp synergistics and kind of the innovation and kind of the problems that the really innovative companies face, right, where it's kind of like being ahead of the game a little bit and people don't even kind of know what's up or down or that they even need it yet. I think, you know, we've covered some of these companies, a lot of these companies here on the podcast before. It kind of is a, you know, a theme that goes on. It's like, oh my gosh, like this is genius. And people are just like, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, cause everybody's just doing the same thing right now. Right. So we're gonna be talking about a lot about that stuff too, as well, how to navigate through that. But, you know, it's, as we always say, we'll start off easy. Right. So let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
So we're in Pittsburgh, PA, 30 days of sunlight a year. Today it's muggy and gross, but it is 61 degrees, so we're happy.
Pittsburgh, PA. I like Pittsburgh. I haven't actually been there myself, but I mean, my wife is a huge Mac Miller fan, right?
Oh, so yeah.
That's like big Pittsburgh, you know, and obviously Steelers, Penguins, all that fun stuff.
That's right.
You know, talk to me about, you know, the vibe in Pittsburgh with cannabis, you know, because we've had people from all over the place, right? Pittsburgh is actually some place we haven't had yet on the podcast. So what's kind of the vibe there? I always like to get a pulse of every place around.
I would say like 2 years ago, about 2.5 years ago, people started to really get hip to it. You know, they, we went through the legalization process, you know, at that point it was all over the news and people started to learn about it. And, I would say it was around that time that the young kids started getting their system and the seizure activity went down as a whole. And, you know, what I noticed here is when people knew somebody that had been effective for, you know, they came around. So the market's cool right now. Everybody's up and running dispensaries. We have our hemp facility. There's I think there's something like 500 hemp farmers in Pennsylvania alone. So it's there. It's moving.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and it sucks too, right? When you hear, you know, and it's common where people maybe have stigma, all kinds of things until they're affected, right? Or somebody they know is affected and they see, oh my gosh, cannabis works. I mean, you know, that being, you know, talk to me about your background in cannabis and kind of, you know, your background in general. You have a great story, but, you know, also, you know, background in generous and kind of what led you here to hemp synergistics.
Yeah, so I can kind of tie those two things together. So my grandpa was a magician. I learned a lot about like influence, like you and I were talking on earlier, you know, sleight of hand. My dad was an entrepreneur that started the largest privately held home security company in the country, Guardian Protection Services. I ended up getting into sales in that early, very early. I was trained by Billy Mays, the OxyClean guy. Hey, I'm Billy Mays with OxyClean, way before he was into OxyClean. And then
he was from there, Mays, though, right?
What's that?
He was still the same Billy Mays. I can imagine.
He was the same exact guy. He just wasn't famous yet, right? Same energy, wow. Same everything.
Wow.
And you know, long story short, it being around those guys early, those three men early in my life, kind of pointed me in a direction where, you know, where I wanted to go, my future was clear. And that's that I wanted to learn how to influence, right? And how to do things, you know, where you get people to buy into something. I ended up going to psychology school and I worked with rats in a Skinner box. And you know, there you're able to really see how people learn, or I should say how animals learn. And you can, you know, use that with people. So where that all played is after psych school, I ended up starting a technology company in California. Saw what marijuana was like in California, where you are. I mean, legalized in 1996, people are used to it. The stigma's not there like it is in the East Coast. And I remember seeing a woman pull out a joint at a playground. She had her baby in a stroller, and there was a cop on the other side of the playground. No one cared, right? And I remember that hitting me pretty hard and thinking, well, you know what? I could take this to the East Coast if this is how eventually it's going to look. I ended up getting into working with the moms that had children with epilepsy. Together, we all got behind a couple of our legislators that were proposing a bill, and we helped fight for that legalization here in PA. And I ended up starting the Medical Cannabis Society, a nonprofit. We went out and did about 50 events. And then from there, I continued to, you know, get further and further in the industry with dispensaries, grow operations, and now into the hemp processing facility and biotech. So that's kind of gives you a, you know, quick Reader's Digest version of you know, my background, how I got here, and, you know, not where I'm at.
Well, yeah, no, definitely. And I think, you know, I definitely want to get deeper into, you know, kind of that introduction with moms. And, you know, I mean, any parent who's worth their price and salt, right, would do anything for the kids, right? And seeing your kids suffer epilepsy, all these kind of things, and definitely want to hear more about that, you know. But you glossed over so quickly. I mean, it's pretty interesting, you know, to me, right? With Billy Mays, right? You're talking about, you know, before he was famous, you know, obviously talking about being able to command kind of an entire audience, and kind of, you know, you're talking about that with magic and kind of how that interests you as well, you know, growing up. But do you have any cool stories with Billy Mays, you know, anything?
So we I can tell you about the day that this, like, I remember specifically the day when I was about, I think I was 5 or 6 years old. My father was working the home show in Pittsburgh, which is a big deal every year at the convention center. And every year he had a booth. And he taught me, we go in, you're going to be part of my system. You're going to, if there's a couple that's walking by with children, I want you to stop the kid, give them candy, start talking with the kid. That way I have time to talk to the parents and say, hey, look, we should put a security system and a fire alarm in your house, because I'd hate to have you lose your kid in a fire. And so that was our system, right? And, you know, I remember my dad had to do that to like 1,000 people before one of them said, all right, you can come back to my house and sell me a security system. Well, he had a corner booth every year. Well, right across the aisle was the other corner booth, and that was Billy Mays. And Billy Mays every year had something he bought from China that was just, you know, something silly and cheap, but it was something that he could really, really pitch as changing your life, whether it was a Salsamatic, Vegematic, Wash-O-Matic, something amatic, right? It was awesome. So this particular year he was selling what he was calling the Wash-O-Matic. And all it was a mop that, you know, you had the twisty thing that all of them have right now, like, right, to get all the water out and stuff out. But back then, it was the first of its kind. So I watched Billy. He had the earpiece on. He was up on a 12-inch riser stage. And every half an hour, he would call the people around, hey, come look at this, right? And like a circus guy, right? So I would watch him sell two mops to every single person. And as a kid, I'm watching him sell to everybody. I'm thinking, how's he doing that? Like, how's he doing that? My dad is having such a hard time. So here the moment happened, right, where I learned it. There was a couple that walked past me. They each had two mops around their shoulder. And the wife looks at the husband and said, you know what? It really stinks that you can only buy two of these mops. And it hit me. Boom. Billy's getting them to pick the card that he wants them to pick, because he's built a system like my grandpa, the magician, right? So here I walked up to him, and I was only, like I said, 6 years old at the time. And I said, Mr. Mays, I'd love to know how to do what you do, but better. That's actually how I phrased it. And I know that because he told me 20 years later, that's what I said to him.
Wow.
So here, he said, all right, kid, stand next to me, and you're going to see one by one, I'm going to pick off each person in the audience, right? I'll pick off the moms, I'll pick off the dads, you'll see. And then at the end, I'm going to hit them with an offer they can't refuse. And that kind of went over my head. I was only 6 years old, but I just, you know, he called me up on stage. I'm sitting next to him and got the 20 people that came up, 30 people. And he says, hey, have you guys ever, you know, he points to the women, have you ever spilled marinara sauce on your grout? And the women are like, yeah, I did. And he goes, watch this. And he spills marinara, he wipes it up. They're like, whoa. Then the husbands are like, oh, big deal. And he says, well, did you guys ever spill motor oil on your, you know, precious garage floor and have it stain? They're like, yeah, I did. I know what you're talking about. Watch this. If you guys buy today, I'll throw in this extra stuff that'll suck that up. And then he's like sucking marble, like doing all kinds of neat stuff with this mop. And the kids want to try it. And you realize very quickly, in like 12 minutes, he's created this circle of amazement around a, you know, something that cost him $2 to manufacture in China. Once he had everyone in the audience, he says, I'll tell you what, I know every one of you guys has someone you love that would to be able to utilize this mop. And if you buy one today, I'm going to give you a second one for free. Boom, all of a sudden, everybody jumping up hand over fist to get two of these mops. When Billy just went around, he sold them all out, and then he'd go right around to the back and he'd fill up, as he's counting his money, he'd fill up a new thing of mops, right? And that really hit me young in life. And that's kind of what pointed me in that direction to go to psychology school and really realize at a scientific level, you know, what's happening, what are they doing? What is he saying? You know, what laws are behind it? But Yeah, that's my Billy Mays story, and ends up here about 24 years later. I'm sitting in a restaurant in Florida with a guy. I had no idea this was going to happen. And we're at a dinner, and he keeps talking about Billy. He says, yeah, well, me and Billy and his wife are out, and me and Billy and this. And this guy's in the infomercial world. And I looked at him. I said, you talking about Billy Mays? And he said, yeah. No, I said, I'm his biggest fan. Like, you have no idea that 6 years old. He says, yeah, yeah, kid. Everybody says that. I says, no, I'm telling you, man. He'd know me. I kid you not. His cell phone rang right there. And he looks and he goes, huh. Speak of the devil, Billy Mays. Hey, Billy, I got a kid here from McKees Rocks that says he knows you. Yeah, yeah, hold on. And I literally saw Billy Mays' face and phone number coming at me. This is like, if it would have been Spider-Man or Michael Jackson, I would have been just excited. Those are my three heroes growing up, right? And I said, hey, Billy, Ruster Sawsmo. And he says, get the heck out of here. I said, no, I'm not kidding. He says, you wouldn't believe Russ. He says, when you walked up to me at 6 years old, he said, you said what you said was, I want to learn to do what you do. He said, it hit me that I'm officially a role model now and I have to grow up. And he said that was actually that had an impact on him. He said, here, I want you to come be on my TV show. We're filming a thing called Pitch Man Discovery Channel. Help me write content and all that. And I went down and I was on the show and all that stuff. It was really cool. But yeah, it's my Billy Mays story, man. It really helped point me in a direction in life.
I mean, I love that. I love that story because there's so much, like, there's so many lessons in there, right? I mean, first and foremost, right off the bat, you learn how to actually command people as opposed to, like you were saying, like your dad is doing, like so many of us are taught to do so many times, right? Like, yeah, you know, you need to hear 100 no's to get those 2 yeses, you know, that kind of stuff. And to go out here and you're kind of just like busting your ass, and there's different ways to do things. You know, we live in 2021, you know, talking about that phone in your hand, right? Everybody's plugged into their phone in their hand, right? And we can sit there and we can hit people up and all that stuff's important. You know, every single way is important, but there's also a way of like getting out there and being that Billy Mays in that way. But, you know, what also strikes me a lot is like, you were that kid. How many other kids were in that room, right? Like, how many other kids came and how many kids have seen Billy Mays, right? And who's the kid that he's like, you know what, you taught me how to be, you know what, because you had to go up and that should struck your mind different. And, you know, I think we live in a time right now where sometimes people are like scared to ask for advice or they think they're better than that or something like that. But like, why? You know, you have the balls, you know, kid over here, 5, 6 years old, and you're going up and you're asking him, hey, how do you do that? You know, and that's
something. Yeah, just being a kid, right? Like, hey, man, how's this work?
Curious. Yeah, super curious, right? And you'd be surprised, like when you ask somebody, you know, one of my mentors taught me, right? I said, if you ask for advice, they'll give you money. If you ask for money, they'll give you advice, right? But right. Like, you know, it's like over here, you had the balls to go up and ask for advice. And he was like, took the time with you. You'd be surprised how many people are willing to take time with you, right? To like teach you different things and teach you different ways and stuff like that, you know? So I don't know. I love that story. You know, so I don't know how we kind of also look at it like this, like it's like sales or like you were talking about, like, you know, being able to, sometimes people look at it as like sleazy, right? But it's not sleazy because people
influence.
Do need that mop. They just don't need the mop, right? Yeah. Like, you know, if you were to go and try and convince everybody why you need the mop, this and that, one by one, maybe you're not getting there, right? But sometimes people need a little push to understand, oh my gosh, this is innovative. Like, this is something that's important. That's going to save me time in the long run. And I need one and my friend needs one, right?
Yeah, you need people to push you along. And where it ended up, you know, culmination in regards to cannabis is, I went out and put on 50 events as a nonprofit to educate people. And I, much like Billy, got hit with radical opposition. Like, why do I need that? Just give me a second to explain it. And little by little, I'm going to start peeling back the layers of this onion. And at the end of the day, you're going to get it. And that's called a heuristic. It's when you have two things that come together and you have an actual thought in your own brain. You can put that information in front of people. So it's in their peripheral. They choose to either take it in or not. And if they do, they can have a new thought. And that's, you know, that's where that influence, that's, like I said, the culmination of that, it turns into influence. Like, you know, people use the word sleazy. I mean, yeah, people could use it for bad, right?
It has a negative connotation. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's even right. The word sales, like, it's like some people are like, oh, people don't want to be sold, right? They go into, like, what'd you come into the lot for? To not buy a car,
right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, they get a defense mechanism. And that's, you know, it happens, but, you know, I embrace that. I like it when someone says, nah, I don't agree with you. And I say, well, hold on. You know, you're obviously not taking in all the information. I don't say that out loud, but, you know, in the next couple bits of information that come out, they realize they weren't taking in all the information. And to me, that's one of the most satisfying things ever is to take someone that hit you with radical opposition and then converting them to a believer in whatever you're, you know, talking about.
For sure. And definitely, I think it pushes the envelope because we live in also a time where people want to live in these echo chambers and they want everybody to agree with them. And if somebody doesn't agree with them, it's like you're out kind of thing. But this is the way you actually make progress, right? And that, like you were saying, that's how people can actually have a new thought in their head, is by actually voicing that opposition, right? How many people are in the audience and they're saying, if I believe in whatever else, but they don't say anything. There's one dude that's like, actually, excuse me, sir, like, what are you talking about? You know, explain that. You know, and I think that's valuable. You know, I think that's super valuable.
I agree.
You know, and, you know, then, you know, moving down, like you said, you know, you're here in California, right? And you're seeing the mom lining up right there, sparking a blunt or whatever, or, you know, probably joint, whatever she had, right? But then you talked about, you know, working with moms, kids with epilepsy. I mean, talk to me a little bit more in depth on that too, like some of those experiences, you know, what?
The thing that really got me into cannabis was, first of all, to see that this was working for children means that it's not all bad, right? So there's something. We approached the moms, and the moms really wanted nothing to do with us at first, you know, because it was early in the game. They were just all moms together. I went to a fundraiser at one of the houses of one of the highest profile patients in Pennsylvania. Her name was Hannah. She was an 11-year-old that had about 10,000 seizures a year. And she had a seizure right in the middle of this fundraiser. I'm talking straight up grand mal, straight back, and her head hit the cement. And that was the minute that like everything changed, the second, because I heard her head hit that, and it was this hollow sound. It was just disgusting. And half the party left scared to death as the ambulance got there to take her to Children's. And the other half kind of was like, hey, let's get another drink. Or did you try the chicken piccata? And from a psych guy, you realize it's because they are so desensitized to what had just had happened. So that, to me, that meant this happens often, you know, like that level happens often. Right. Well, they took her to Children's, and about 2 weeks went on. My business partner at the time called me and said, hey, they just sent Hannah home from the hospital. She's got about 14 days to live because her organs are shutting down. She's not going to make it. They told her to begin hospice and, you know, all that goes with. He says, you got to find her this oil. And I spent about the next 4 hours on the phone with different states, California, Arizona, California, Colorado, you know, places where I would be able to get a lab test with this stuff, because we didn't want to give kids something with metal in it or something like that. So within 4 hours, I was on the phone with a university on the East Coast. And like within 3 days, they didn't want to send it to me, but the person that was funding them threatened to pull their research funding. They gave me they overnighted it. I had 11 days left on her death sentence. She was immobile for 2 days on her side, had a feeding tube in. They took 1 grain of rice sized THC oil, put it inside her lip. Within 7 minutes, she was up swiping at the mouth, you know, the feeding tube. And within about half an hour, she had so much energy that they had to put a helmet on her. She was walking around. And that was in 2014. And at the time, she was having 10,000 seizures a year. Now she's, I think, 18 years old, something like that, 17 years old. She's communicating with her mother for, you know, first time ever. Her quality of life has increased. Her mother's quality of life has increased. And she's down to like something like 4 seizures a month, major seizures a month. So it was a huge win. And that moment where I got to see that whole thing happen, where she went from, you know, not going to make it to thriving, or, you know, is as good as she's going to get based on her condition. Uh-huh. You know, that really changes a person, right? Like when you realize you can save people and you can go out and make people's lives better. And I never looked back at that point. I sold my tech company and I used that to jump into the cannabis industry. And, you know, that was about, like I said, 6, almost 7 years later now. So it's been a wild ride, but that's how I got into it.
I mean, that's super powerful stuff, you know, and, you know, it's, like I said, it's a shame so many times that, you know, it takes for people. So against, you know, wherever people are, you know, that's these stories, right? I mean, I have a couple of questions. Like, why do you think these kind of stories aren't more widespread publicized? I mean, we do here, right? I mean, Charlotte's Web, right, was pretty big, but like, and I guess the second part is why do you think it takes people these kind of stories so many times to kind of to move them, right? I mean, coming from psych and everything like that, you know, where would it get to the point where it's like, dude, like cannabis is helping people. You know what I mean? There's adult, yeah. there's medical, there's medicinal, there's all kinds of different reasons for this, you know, and it just boggles my mind. I mean, you know, like you said, I'm a little biased. I'm from LA too. So I have a different kind of upbringing. Right. And so that affects it too. But I mean, where does that come from, you think?
Yeah. So, I mean, cognitive dissonance is a bitch. That's one of my favorite sayings of all time. I wrote a book. It's coming out next month. I talk about a lot in the book. And what cognitive dissonance is when you hold a certain belief and new information comes in that makes you feel uncomfortable because that's not what you believe. So you choose not to believe the new information, uh-huh. right? And if we look back at the special interests back in the 30s, right? William Randolph Hearst, DuPont, the people that really put hemp and cannabis in a, they demonized it, right? And they did all the reefer madness and all the media said it. Well, that media is all people read and that media said it was bad. Then you had Richard Nixon that grew up in that time period of, you know, when they demonized cannabis and he became the leader of the free world. And he went out and made drugs his number one enemy, right? Marijuana specifically. So you can't even research it, they said. Yeah. So for our parents, let's say, to have grown up in an era where this was demonized, it was bad, it was illegal. That's just what you're taught. Just like people are taught different religions. You know, you got, and you think it's funny that a person grows up Catholic, they think it's one thing. A Muslim thinks it's another thing. A Jew thinks it's another thing. Come on. Are we all right? Right. Or are we all wrong? What is it?
Everybody always thinks they're right. You know, right. That's a problem.
So in this particular case, you know, it was demonized so much that that's just what people are taught to believe. The kids are what helped lift that dissonance because it's very hard to not believe something when it's working with someone you know or someone with, you know, that you know, you know, family member or a loved one of a loved one. When that personal story comes into your world, it lifts that dissonance faster than just factual information. Like, hey, by the way, you know, this is working, right? Well, I don't want to believe that because it's a drug. And I've had a lot of people that just harp on that. Well, it's a gateway drug. Well, I know they said that in your generation, but did you know that Mothers Against Drunk Driving just said it's not a gateway drug? And Mothers Against Drunk Driving are probably the, like, they're like the apropos when it comes to this. So like, if they're, are you wrong? My aunt that doesn't know anything, right? You're just saying that because you're irritated at the dinner at Thanksgiving, you know, because I, you know, that kind of stuff. So it usually takes people seeing someone, a loved one, and them coming around. And if I look at the life cycle of it, I would say it takes people, it could take them years, but I think people are all starting to come around and now we're looking past that, right? Like now that 50% of the country's legalized and all that, people growing up in this world now, younger kids, they're not even going to know that this was bad. You know, they'll probably demonize alcohol more so, you know, in the next 20 yeah. years. Yeah. So, you know, that's what it is. It comes down to cognitive dissonance. And cognitive dissonance is a strong psychological trick that unless you know it's happening, even when you know it's happening to you, it's very hard. I mean, I understand that stuff at the, you know, the actual psychological level, down to the molecular level, you know, how it's affecting the different chemicals in your brain. But when it's happening to you, it's really hard to see above that, you know? So yeah. Cognitive dissonance is a bitch.
It is a bitch. And you know, that's kind of the whole thing, right? Is talking about, you know, thinking, right? And when something challenges you, it forces you to shut down or think, right? And so many times, you know, anything that goes against our worldview, we're just going to like, no, because it forces us to actually question ourselves and question our thoughts and question our thinking. If we question that, what else are we going to question? Right. What else? What kind of behaviors do I have? Right. That are just completely unhealthy, toxic. Who have I hurt along the way?
Right.
Like what? And that's kind of like that Pandora's box that you open up the second someone questions anything, you know, and that's why, like, you know, where this term gaslighting comes from. Right. It's just like, right. That's not happening. It's like, no, it is. It's like, no, it's not. It's like, no, but it is though. You know, it's just like people will just like to the grave, just believe this thing.
Right.
Unless, you know, God forbid these kind of, you know, exposed to these kind of things themselves or something they know. You know, so I don't know. It's it is a bitch, that's for sure. Now, you know, here you are. Right, I've been doing this for many years now. I mean, you know, dropped everything, and now in the cannabis. You know, but we talk about this word innovation, right? Talk about Billy Mays and kind of that. You know, it seems second nature now that mop with the spidery thing that's gonna dry it out, you know, to get out all the water, everything. You know, what is hemp synergistics? First of all, what are you guys all about? And what are you guys doing that's so innovative, you know? Because, I mean, I think that's what you're all about.
Yeah, so we, let's see, best way to summarize us. So we're looking to take the hemp ingredients or, you know, cannabinoids and make them available in the most efficient and effective manner for the big fish up the supply chain. Right. So where, let's just talk about the nature of like right now. Right. So I like to separate it and say you have your first wave guys and you have your now the second wave. And the first wave guys, are the guys that jump into any new gold rush, right? So first guys jumped in, you could buy an Apex extractor for 200 grand. All you need is 30% down. Within an hour of on the phone training, you're pressing medicine for people. Those were the early adopters that weren't afraid to wade through the murky regulation and the fact that this is kind of illegal, kind of not. There's, you know, all kinds of gray area, let's say. If you look at this, the nature, the state of the industry, while these first waivers had it, Charlotte's Web, first waiver, okay? Squeeze hemp into a jar, flavor it with mint, brand it, sell it, okay? Then you have Medterra, same thing. Squeeze it, put a different flavor in it, maybe a different level of cannabinoids, brand it, sell it. There's no innovation. They're all Me Too products, right? So when we, as the Medical Cannabis Society, reached out to people that were ingesting this, patients, caretakers, physicians that want to give it to patients, we asked them, how would you like to see it? First thing they said is, we don't take drugs or medications out of a tincture. Nobody does. I mean, like, maybe vitamin D, maybe vitamin B, but like people really don't use tinctures, right? So that
was the main form of medicine right back in the day. That was like
way back in the day, but yeah, they
turn of the century, right? I mean, but
they didn't have pill pressing
there. There was all kinds of fun stuff too, you know?
Right. Well, and that's true. Actually, I mean, the fact that you say that, lozenges, tinctures, food, you know, that's what they did back then, but they didn't have the technology that we have now, right? And that's kind of evolved since then. So those guys are all kind of doing that. The nutraceutical world's not jumping into this because, number one, it's a little bit gray right now. But the main reason is they only have powdered, they don't put powder in capsules. You can't put liquid. Yeah, you can use a gel cap, but then you're limited to just that liquid. What nutraceutical wants to do is compound it with additional things. They want to be able to put turmeric in it. They want to be able to put melatonin so it can be used for sleep. You know, they want to be able to compound it so that it's more than just CBD, because the industry is not going to be a CBD industry. This is going to become an ingredient for everybody, just like vitamin B is an ingredient. So vitamin D is an ingredient. We're not there yet. So what we, you know, that's a major problem, right? Those guys aren't getting in because it needs to be powdered. When you look at the food industry, they're having a hard time getting in because you'd be surprised at how many companies are doing R&D on CBD and they stop because they can't get their recipe to taste the way it's supposed to taste. And now it just tastes like hemp. It tastes like weed. You know, it tastes bitter. It's got like a, I don't know if you ever, you know, actually put this raw stuff up. I mean, it's so bitter that you feel it for 10 minutes. Screws up your taste buds. So like an Oreo or a Chips Ahoy or, you know, something like that, they're not going to put CBD in their age old recipe or their brand to tarnish their brand. They're not going to do it. So what we did is we decided to innovate and find out how do we make it so that we can give these guys a product that'll work. So for the nutraceutical industry, we took distillate that doesn't pour. I mean, if you took distillate in its most concentrated form, it's worse than glue. It's like, I mean, pasty glue, like it doesn't pour. We took a polysaccharide double helix structure, like a DNA thing, opened it up, put the CBD in it, closed it back up. And now we have something that pours like flour. So these guys can actually just put it right into a capsule the way they like to do it. For the food and beverage industry, we took that same technology and we actually diluted it a little bit so that it mixes easier in food. But we got rid of the taste and the smell and the bitter aftertaste. So now what's happening, we're approaching food companies and where they had tried CBD before and it didn't work, they now put this in and they say, where was this last year when we decided to put all this time and energy into R&D? So that's the kind of innovating we're doing, right? We're looking at major problems to solve within the industry, not necessarily just come up with a product that's like everybody else. If you look at another problem, now that hemp's federally legal, you have people driving around with flowered hemp, you know, like hemp flower, right? It looks like weed, smells like weed, tastes like weed. Nobody could tell the difference unless you're using some sort of lab to, you know, break it apart and look at what the molecules say. because now people are going to be getting pulled over with hemp. You have state crime lab systems that are going to get backed up with hemp that's supposed to be legal, right? Where no one should get in trouble for it. But yet if I am pulled over and I have hemp in the car, cops got to assume it's cannabis. He's got to take me, arrest me, or cite me, depending on what my jurisdiction says. Then it's going to get put in this, the marijuana or the hemp itself is going to get put in the state crime lab system. It's going to take 8 months in queue to actually get onto the lab equipment, get tested. It's going to cost $800. And they're going to find out it's hemp. And this was all just a big exercise just to prove it was something that was legal. So what we did is we worked with Purdue University Northwest in their forensics department. And we patented a product that actually right on the hood of a car, a police officer can take hemp, break it up, put it in a little vial with some chemicals, shake it, and within 90 seconds tell you if that's hemp or marijuana. And it actually quantifies the number. So it's not just pass, fail. It's 0.3, it's 1%, it's 2%, 3%, 4%, whatever. And we did that, and we could do that for a cost of about $14 per test. So when you look at the delta between $800 in 8 months and now $14 in 90 seconds, that's a pretty big difference. And that's first to market of its kind. And we're actually in the process of, that's in the process of being written into legislation in the state of Indiana as we speak. So we're really excited about that, but that's kind of the innovation I'm talking about is let's look at impediments and let's innovate so that those impediments are no longer impediments. We'll find new impediments once we get to the next level. But, the first waivers have kind of all been sitting around just squeezing hemp into a jar, and there's been no innovation. So, when we talk about us innovating, it's searching for problems, finding solutions.
For sure. I mean, that's awesome. That's, and you're 100% right. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? Like you said, started off, it's funny, right? People spending all this money on these equipment, these labs, and people, startups, and listen, I always say, right, don't hit the player, hit the game, right? So you can't hate all these people, great, man, they're getting in and they're trying to do their best and hustling and doing everything they can and about trying to build a brand. What are you going to do? That's kind of what's available to a lot of people. It's so funny, right, having all this equipment to do something that was done 100 years ago, and all this stuff. And, but then we run into this issue, right, like you were saying, right, asking doctors, asking physicians, asking nurses, what do you guys want? Well, we want kind of what's kind of been structured and what people are used to taking now. And you ask, people, hey, take a tincture, you ask Anna to take a tincture and she's like, tincture, what the hell, why? Right. It's just like this kind of weird thing. But then there's this other aspect as well, right? Where you talked about CBD being an ingredient, right? And we hear all the time CBD, 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 CBD. When people talk about the CBD bubble popped and that blah, blah, blah. But it's just like, first and foremost, most people don't even know still. And most people haven't tried. And if they try, maybe they tried once and then like all these other things, whatever else. But we're still far off from it because, right, it's hemp synergistics, right? I think we're the whole aspect of the cannabinoids, about cannabinoid profiles, about terpenes, about everything that combines and everything else in the plant. And it's kind of like this battle between THC, right? That shit's going to get you high, and CBD. And so many times CBD just becomes this catch-all term, right? Where it's like, not really, we're not talking about the molecule CBD. We're talking about actually hemp and everything, the other cannabinoids, right? But the problem is that people, the buzzword is CBD, right? That's kind of the problem. Right, is that everybody's looking for CBD, it's a CBD store, not the hemp store, right. But yours hemp synergistics, right? But people are online searching for CBD products. How do you kind of get around that stuff, right? Where it's like,
well, as a branding guy, it's very difficult. CBD is the buzzword. CBD is what's getting all the press, right? Because that's what the news knows. They know CBD. When looking at Amazon banking, if you have the word CBD on stuff, they're cutting it out, right? Yeah. You're not allowed to be on Amazon with CBD. Banking, same thing. Yeah. Hemp is
payment processors too. Most payment, if you have CBD even in the URL, right, it's going to automatically,
all kinds of issues, right? And that's coming around. That'll change, but CBD got branded, and then it got kind of branded as like, it's kind of like THC. It's kind of like
Wild West.
At the end of the day, as I look at people just getting on board with CBD, at least especially here on the East Coast, getting into other cannabinoids like CBG, CBN, there's a whole level of education that they have to get to before you even start talking about that.
Yeah.
So for right now, I think it's good that CBD's it. It was branded. People get it. They know it's related to hemp. The rest of the stuff is going to come around as research figures out that CBG works for PTSD, CBN for Parkinson's. What's going to happen is no one's going to know or care about the word hemp or CBD in 3 to 5 years. They're going to go back to their nutraceutical manufacturer, their products that they've always purchased, and that's going to have CBD or hemp or whatever, you know, whatever cannabinoid makes sense for that particular ailment that they're purchasing for, right? So pain medications, or I'm saying not medications, but over-the-counter stuff, they're going to have hemp, or I should say CBD as an ingredient, along with turmeric and other things that help with pain relief, like the previous pain relief pill that nutraceutical company A had. You're going to have, you know, pills that come out for sleep. They're going to have low amounts of CBN with other things that help block the enzymes so that the enzymes don't get to it because it's a very expensive cannabinoid. So the stuff's going to get more intelligent and people are going to go right back to the shelves they're used to picking up. Oh, you know, I like Nature's Best and I like, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to go get something for pain and it's going to have CBD in it. I think that's what we're going to see evolve because people aren't going to, like, not everyone's going to get in the know about all the minor cannabinoids. They're just not, they're just going to buy based on their particular ailment. So at the end of the day, I think it's silly that a lot of these stores branded is like the CBD store, but at the end of the day, again, they might not be in business much longer, right? Because they were stuck into one little thing. And now the market's starting to expand and Walgreens is bringing this stuff on. So you don't go to Walgreens to get prescription one and then drive, you know, across the street to just buy one thing that you could get at Walgreens. You buy it all at Walgreens, right? And that's kind of where I see that stuff going. So as far as the answer to your question, CBD, yeah, it's unfortunate it all got, you know, kind of stuck in with CBD, but the world needed to figure out that there's a good side to this plant. It was the opposite of THC. It doesn't create a high, and that started, which is nice. So the rest of the stuff will open up and eventually this stuff will just be in nutraceuticals as pain relief, sleep relief, whatever.
Sure, for sure. No, you know, you're right that we used to have a ways to go, you know, and that kind of this will be go the way of the dodo, you know, at some point. And just in terms of the vernacular that we're using and kind of the way that we think about it. But you, like you said, it's still 3-5 years ahead, right? So, I mean, what are you guys doing now to stay afloat? Or, you know, or is it kind of like, hey, we've innovated. We don't need to do B2C. We can do B2B, right? Where you're talking about the nutraceuticals. Is that kind of where you guys are at with that? Or is it kind
that
of
is where we're at? So we've created retail products just to showcase the ingredients. We're in Pittsburgh. We have two of the larger nutraceutical manufacturers as clients already. We've only been doing this for a few months as far as selling the ingredients. We're talking with a lot of tier one brands in the food industry, a lot of them, surprising amount of like the top 10, because they're looking at this stuff now and they want to find out what form do they put it in? What, you know, what's going to cause them the least amount of trouble, which one's going to be flowing right on the machines. You know, which one's going to taste right. And they're in R&D, a lot of companies in R&D. But what was the question? I lost my train of thought on that.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis and CBD marketing, branding, SEO content, and web design. If you are a cannabis owner and you know you need an uptick in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
I was just saying, you know, how do you stay afloat in the next 3 to 5 years?
Why So we're doing that. I mean, we're selling. You'd be surprised at how many food manufacturers are just doing this, despite the fact that it's not necessarily federally legal in food. You know, the state of New York has just legalized in food. I know West Virginia legalized hemp as a food when they did their hemp program. So just like the marijuana industry, where you have these states kind of all doing their own patchwork of things, you know. We're seeing that with hemp as well, especially in food. So we personally are selling the food and food nutraceutical and having a good time doing it. We're also doing a THC extraction. So we're remediating the THC from other manufacturers that can't take out the THC. So there's a couple different ways we're making money.
Amazing. I guess the follow-up question to that is, where is the convention where all the nutraceuticals and manufacturers are so you can do your Billy Mays thing, you know what I mean, and get them all there? Come one, come all, right? Where is that? Is that stuff going on?
The White Label Convention in Vegas and New York, and I will be at both of them speaking this year. If they have them. They're supposed to have them. They're not going to do virtual. They keep putting it off until they can actually have it. So, yeah, see you at the White Label Convention.
Do it. Let's do it. Definitely be there. So, cool, man. I mean, you know, we talked about kind of the, you know, obstacles of education, talked about, you know, where you've come here, right, on getting to this place and innovating. It's freaking awesome. You know, I think that's always the name of the game, and it's always better to innovate than to just be the, you know, be one of the many, you know, and be the this or that. And sometimes, you know, it's tough innovating because, like we're saying, sometimes people don't know what it is yet, you know, and you got to educate right. on that regard. But, you know, aside from that, what's kind of your biggest obstacle right now in kind of getting your name out there, doing all that kind of stuff, and anything else that you guys are facing? How are you guys able to overcome that?
I'll tell you, one of the biggest problems is the gray area with banking, with advertising. I mean, those anyone that jumps in the industry will, you know, if you bring up banking, they're going to roll their eyes.
Everybody's always like payment processing. Banking, you know, it's like there's a common pains that we're all feeling, you know?
Yep. So that's a big one. But advertising is a big one. I mean, if you know, you're launching a retail brand and you're trying to get on social media with it, you can't. You know, there's tricks and stuff. I mean, a lot of the companies have a completely different website that doesn't mention CBD at all. It just says hemp. And they could advertise on social media. So, you know, things like that are kind of annoying. You know, we're in the ingredient, you know, we're out to sell ingredients. So we can kind of, we don't need to deal with social media that much, but that's a big obstacle. And the other obstacle is, you know, getting the C-level suite on the phone and educating them and helping them wade through that. It's, you know, there's so much of an education process that you need that exposure to them. And that's not always easy to get. Now in our position, we're very lucky because our executive team, you know, comes from nutraceutical and you know, food and beverage and law enforcement as far as the testing of the stuff. So when we get on the phone with these guys, it's a very quick, you know, educational session and they have a lot of trust for us. But that's the overall problem for the industry is getting people on the phone, getting them to buy into it. Because a lot of them will just say, you know, nah, it's illegal or no, we're not doing it. When really, if they heard what it's doing and how easy it is to integrate it and there's other formulations, it would be an easier sale. But, you know, so that stigma in a way is still there at that level, but that's coming around too, which is nice.
For sure. Definitely coming around. And it's one of those things too, where some people are like, oh, wait and see, right? And waiting for legislation. And as soon as that happens, it's going to be like, boom, you know, but it's kind of the people who are getting those, you know, as you know, it's not like turning on a faucet, right? Everything. And then this stuff is like that. It's always about kind of being ahead of the game and getting those wheels moving, you know, beforehand, you know, not being reactionary, you know, and kind of going to go on. So, but like you said, I think people are starting to come around to that for sure. You know, I guess, so talk to me a little bit then, you know, hemp synergistics in the future, right? So talk to me, you know, what do you guys have coming up? You know, what can we expect from you guys in the future?
So we have two more things that we're working on. One is I can't really talk too much about it, but I can tell you we filed for the provisional patent. So I can give you at least this much. We have a patch that we have in R&D
cool.
that in the research and development period, we've tested it on people. We had a former NFL player here in the office, and he has ongoing knee pain, very bad knee pain. We slapped this patch on him, and 5 minutes later, we just said, hey, but how's your leg feel? And he said, I can't even feel the whole right side of my body. So we got some tweaking.
Turn it down a little bit.
we can't paralyze people. Right? So we have to kind of pull back. But we're working on that. And that's all that revolves around an all natural compound, I should say. It's about 60 different. I'm trying to think of the right word. It's not really a chemical. It's a natural natural molecule. There's about 60 of them that we now have integrated in with this patch that help that molecule get through the skin very fast into the bloodstream. The reason we looked into this stuff is and I started to talk about this earlier and I got sidetracked, but when we asked doctors, caretakers, and patients what they want, Patients will tell you they want vapes, typically because the patients are older, you know, and this was early in the game. Doctors tell you they want capsules or pills. And the caretakers that take care of the children said that they would want rectal administration. And like when you first hear that, you think, like, what? But you realize it's because that's the fastest way to a bloodstream, to the bloodstream outside of injecting, you know, a child with stuff. So that they're used to using Diastat rectally. So here we looked into that, you know, mucous membranes in the lip and the nose, or could you just get through the skin faster? And that's where the patch came in. So pretty excited about that. We think that'll probably launch end of this year. That should be pretty good at knockout whole half body of pain. So.
Wow. Love that. Yeah. And you know, that's kind of what goes into it, right? I mean, I have a buddy as well, Krusty Nicola, also an innovator. Crappies Feel Better. He's also hemp, you know, just like staunchly like hemp, not cannabis, not CBD, hemp.
Right.
Not, you know what I mean? And he comes from pharmaceuticals and putting this stuff together. And he was like, hell, man, we came up with the sleeping kind of formula. And I tried things to myself. I tried one the first time and it didn't wake up for a day and a half. I was like, all right, maybe tone that down a little bit, you know?
Yeah. But,
yeah, that's how it goes, you know.
CBN, so, man.
Yeah, exactly.
CBN knock you out for a day and a half, but
yeah. So for sure. So cool. You know, Russ, this has been great. You know, one of my favorite things to talk about here on the show is, you know, obviously talking about business and everybody's journey and everything like that. But you know, it can be tough, and people have different ideas about this and that. You know. So talk to me about your definition of success. You know, whether professionally, personally, spiritually, what does success look like for you?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, being known as a good leader, right, that can make the right call, you know, that's how you get successful and stay successful, is you have to keep making the right decisions, because then the people that you're leading, you know, they want to know that they can look up to someone that's making the right decisions, right? Success-wise in the hemp industry, I mean, our goal is to, you know, get in there and make a name for ourselves and really appeal to these big tier one manufacturers. So success to me would be, you know, becoming part of one of those as an ingredient supplier, whether they purchase us, acquire us, we do some sort of merger, but ultimately, you know, success in creating these ingredients, staying ahead of the curve, staying ahead of innovation, at the top of innovation, and, you know, just never slow down, because otherwise someone else is going to out succeed you.
100%. Always staying ahead of the game, you know? So, you know, that's always, and you mentioned a great point, right? You know, being a good leader, you know, and that's another thing, is people have different definitions of what a leader is. And I think you're right. You know, I mean, can't be right all the time. I think there's something there for failure and, you know, owning up to that stuff, you know, in the right kind of way, obviously, you know, but definitely, you know, being able to make those quick decisions and, you know, going with it, going with your gut, and being able to, you know, weigh out the pros and cons on everything, and being right most of the time, obviously, you know,
right. I mean, like you said, or being able to react if you're not right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, pivoting, you know, exactly. You know, sometimes it's like, we can sit here and, you know, one of my mentors is like, hey, you know what, fall fast, you know, make a decision, go with yourself, go with the gut. And, you know, obviously, taking in the information that you need, you can't be sitting here 2 months down the road. Otherwise you could have already done three, four changes and, you know, already been running already, you know? So it's, I agree, you know, so that's great stuff for us. I appreciate that. You know, as we close, you know, how can listeners find out more about Hemp Synergistics, connect with you, products, and, you know, do everything, you know?
Yeah. So go to hempsynergistics.com. If you want to look at the ingredients, if anyone wants to, you know, purchase retail products that we've put the ingredients in, I can tell you a couple things. You can go to puresynergistics.com. That's our high level maximum strength line. We also have Lily Rain, which is tailored for women. It has lower dosages, but it's for integrating into more products, soap, bath bombs, you know, things that women are used to doing on a day-to-day basis. One of the things I'll mention is our BioDry, the product we patented, the pourable hemp. One of the neat things is, because we covered in that polysaccharides are impervious to stomach acids. So whereas you might take a 30 milligram CBD pill from somebody else or a tincture, your stomach's going to destroy about 90% of the active ingredient. So you've got 10% left to go up in your bloodstream. Because we covered in that polysaccharide goes right through the stomach, impervious to the stomach acids, doesn't get degraded. Then when it gets into your lower intestine, there's an enzyme called amylase that's naturally in your lower intestine. breaks that polysaccharide shell open, and boom, you have 100% of the ingredient ready to go off into the body. So if you're, if you've tried CBD and you know, you want to try the next level, or you need higher dose, the Pure Synergistics capsules are, they have to be the best on the market at this point. And we've done a lot of R&D. We've done a lot of testing with people. And at the end of the day, this is a brand that now doctors are getting behind. In fact, we have doctors that have taken our formulation are now white labeling it under their own brand, because it's technology that they could get behind, because it's things they're used to seeing in the nutraceutical world that they would suggest their patients, because there is truly innovation behind it. It's not squeeze it in a bottle and do it. It's, hey, this molecule is going to get further into your system because we did X to it. So you can get that stuff at puresynergistics.com. And we got the bake mix there. We got our food products there as well. And if you need to get a hold of me, I'm on LinkedIn. Hit me on LinkedIn. It's the easiest way.
Amazing, amazing, Russ. I really appreciate you. Thank you so much. And thank everybody for listening as well. I appreciate all of you wherever you're listening. And check out Russ, connect with him, check out Hemp Synergistics. A great guy, great company. So good luck to you, Russ, and the rest of Hemp Synergistics the rest of the year and beyond.
Thanks, Mater. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calacan.com. That's grow@calacann.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.